Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, Kirk Cousins beat a bad football team. How about that?
Congratulations. I never know what version of you I'm going to get on this Sunday afternoon. So I like happy Anthony.
I warned you. I was like, hey, I've already had a couple mimosas, just to let you know.
What? Say that word again.
A couple mimosas.
Kind of how you said it the first time.
I warned you that I had a couple mimosas. So the place that we went to, the place that I live out here in Yorba Linda, and there's this like spot that is just known for football come football season. It's called Lampo's Pizza out here. And They just moved to a new spot. And as a part of their new move, they now offer bottomless mimosas. So Sunday shows are going to be a lot of fun moving forward. No, I kept it, fairly okay. Today's show, as you guys normally are accustomed to, it is a mailbag show. We have a ton of questions. I was surprised by how many questions we actually got, given that it is now September 22. That so really surprised me.
Thank you so much to listeners for that. Like, it's so hard to get through the summer and like without the listeners submitting their questions. This is the last Sunday we're going to have without training camp, at least, right?
Dude.
So you guys got us through, and thank you very much
for that. Dude, we're almost there. Let's go ahead and dive on into these questions, because as it is, I'm going to have to open up the mailbag again later in the week. QBreezy12 starts us off with, which ownership/front office style do you prefer, Lakers or Dodgers? Both have received tons of criticism, some warranted. Lakers have focused too much on stars, too little on margins, prioritized familiarity and nepotism. The Dodgers have shied away from the big splash acquisitions recently and focus on process and development, bring in the smartest people. Bonus question, how far do the Dodgers go this year? They're going to lose in the World Series. I'm already prepared for myself for that. But Pete, I'm asking you, because as an outsider, you're not really a Dodgers fan. You can be a little bit more unbiased on this. So yeah,
my girlfriend's a Dodgers fan, and she's kind of converted me, and it's also kind of therapeutic to listen to a well-run franchise, or watch them operate throughout the year, and that kind of gives away the answer to that for me. For me, it's the Dodgers by far, because the Dodgers have built something really sustainable. Now, even if they do lose in the World Series again, that's they've won how many straight
division
titles?
You're getting to the World Series.
And you're getting to the World Series, and like the future is really bright. Like it's not, the Dodgers are not in a like this is a 1 or 2 year window type of situation. Now, baseball is less dependent upon superstars, right? It's not like Mike Trout can single-handedly carry the Angels to the playoffs, whereas the NBA is more dependent upon that. So I don't want to act like it's an apples-to-apples comparison in that respect. But, the Dodgers to me are a good example of a team that leverages their big market because even though they don't really sign those superstars, they've got one of the higher payrolls in baseball for sure. It's not like they're cheap, right? And that's a big market team using analytics, using getting the best people in there, and they've created something sustainable. And baseball's so dependent upon a little bit of luck and something going right. Getting to the World Series, going as far as they can, them not having won it, I don't really hold that against them. They've built something really great there, and I'd love to have something similarly sustainable with the Lakers, which I don't think is impossible, but Dodgers are a lot closer.
It's going to be interesting to see how the NBA handles, because there's so much talent at the NBA level that it doesn't make sense that there isn't a minor league. Like right now you have the G League, which is, it's a lot closer to being a unified entity with the NBA than it was a couple of years ago, but it still is relatively separate compared to baseball, where you can grow a Gavin Lux away from the team and then insert him into a playoff run. And because of the amount of reps that he's gotten at such a competitive minor league system, he is now ready to step in and be somewhat ready to compete at that level. It's going to be interesting to see, because I think that's what the NBA is kind of working towards, is to have a G League that can filter people in, filter guys in and get them reps, get young players reps, reps. Bol Bol, I think, is the – I think he's – to me, Bol Bol is a really interesting case study in player who was taken, who at one point was seen as a lottery talent and is now – in the G League with the Denver Nuggets. It signed this two-way deal. Probably should have stayed in college, to be honest. But you know, is now going to have the opportunity to really kind of marinate in the G League, get himself ready for the NBA, and we're going to see how that process works. Like, the rest of the NBA is focused on how Bol Bol develops and whether or not he's going to be able to make it work when he actually makes it up to the Nuggets. I wish the Lakers utilized their G League in some of the same way. And actually, Talen Horton Tucker, he's kind of a case study in and of himself, where he's a really young guy that the Lakers took and is going to basically stew in the G League this year, and they're going to see how he develops down there. So to answer the actual question, it's obviously the Dodgers, right? It's anybody who answers Lakers over Dodgers, you're a homer, right? But it's not as simple as one over the other, because one system has had decades, you know, tens of years to be able to have this minor league system that allows you to operate in a way that the Dodgers system is able to take advantage of right now. And I want to see, you know, which, if it isn't the Lakers, I want to see which NBA team starts to utilize their G League team in the same way that baseball utilizes theirs.
Yeah, I don't think the NBA can ever get to that type of minor league system, just because the nature of the sport is so different, right? You play every day or just about in baseball, and that's going to require a deeper bench. And then, you know, it's very position specific. Obviously, the Dodgers have a lot of very versatile guys.
Also, the culture of the sport, like, baseball players are used to that. Basketball players, when you get drafted, you're ready for the league.
For sure. And that speaks to the, you know, there's always a question with the G League. And I think they're doing a good job of bridging this gap, but it's still there. Of, if I draft an 18-year-old like Talen Horton Tucker, is it more beneficial for him to spend time with the pro team, practicing against the, you know, the best players in the world in basketball, with NBA level development coaches and coaching staffs, getting used to oppositional personnel, even if it's just, you know, scouting them and all of that? Is it better to have that, or is it better to get 30 minutes a game in the G League? I think it depends. In baseball, it's obvious. You want Gavin Lux, you want Will Smith, guys like that, to be able to play every day and until they're ready to come up to the big show. I think it's a little less obvious, that distinction, in the NBA.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the grand answer to this, the high level kind of moralist answer to this, is, hey, college schools should start paying their high level athletes, you know? And at that point, how do these leagues respond when the athletes who are generating money for their schools start getting paid as they should be? But until that point, you know, we got to see how the various leagues, these couple leagues in question here, actually handle their minor league systems. Let's take a quick second here, because when we come back, the questions don't get any shallower. We have some hard-hitting questions this week. So let's come back.
I love you guys. Thank you. Yeah.
All right, Money Mike H. writes, what's up, man? So I'm a Cowboys fan, and let me tell you right now, Kirk Cousins is a bum. I watched him while he was with Washington.
He's coming in hot. Yeah. Mike's coming in hot with his question. I like it.
I wish I could disagree. So don't get any hopes up. I'm saying this right now, as Kirk Cousins played really well. It was funny. I went out to watch the game today, and I'm trying to figure out what the NBA equivalent of the player would be. But Kirk Cousins is phenomenal, really, really good against bad teams. He is awful in prime time against, like, good teams. And he is, like, admitted to being nervous against, like, when the lights are the brightest. So it's a good thing the Vikings just spent $30 million guaranteed for a year on this jackass. But anywho, the question doesn't have anything to do with that. My question to you is, what are your thoughts on equal pay with women's sports? I'm against it as far as WNBA, but I do think women's national soccer team deserves more. They kind of, Mike starts to kind of get at it a little bit there with you're talking about the generation of revenue, right? Women's national team generates, it's tough. They generate as much as the men's U.S. team when it's not the World Cup, right? When you start getting into the World Cup, you are now talking about the biggest worldwide sporting event that is not the Olympic, not the Olympics, across the entire globe. And it's hard to isolate how much of that, like when Team USA starts playing, how much of the interest in that event has to do with the event and how much of that has to do with the team that is playing in it. It doesn't help that the team that is playing in it is such a mess, the way that the men's team is. Now, when you talk about the women's World Cup, now you're starting to get into, and a lot of these countries that have been historically good at soccer on the men's side of things, they're starting to invest in their national women's team, and I think that has a lot to do with why this last women's World Cup was as competitive as it was, you know, and it was interesting to hear. I was listening to. I forget the guy. He's one of the men in coats or men in sweaters or whatever he is. He's a soccer expert. He used to work with Grantland, and then I think it's Men in Coats. Ah, man, I'm pissed at myself for forgetting it. But he actually went on Dan Le Batard's show, and he talked about the effect that Title IX had on the head start that the U.S. women's team had on the rest of the world. And it was fascinating to hear that conversation take place, right? But as it stands, there are very few arguments against the women's national team to make less money, you know, than the men's national team when it comes to soccer. The WNBA is a little bit more complicated, though, because there isn't as much interest in those games as there is the men's games. So I don't know. I kind of laid the foundation of the conversation. I don't know how you handle that dynamic there, where it's not that the women don't work as hard as the men, right?
Like, none of us get paid for how hard we work.
That's true, right? That's fair. And that's the retort. It's tough here when you're talking about a league that is trying to garner support on a national level, and as a result, while they're trying to garner that support, they're also fighting for equal pay. So I don't really know how you handle that dynamic. You know, the WNBA, the women who are playing in that league are never going to make as much as the NBA. There's just such a head start there. And sure. How do you handle that one there?
So in a sentence, I think that in, you know, private enterprises, it's a matter of how much revenue are you generating. And then with national teams, I absolutely think they should be making the same as they do with the men, right? So, you know, sports like golf, or more like tennis and soccer, although soccer is on the national side. So let's use tennis as an example. Like, women's tennis is, you know, I believe comparably popular to men's tennis.
Yep.
And, you know, the purses should reflect that. This is a topic I'm not terribly educated on, so I apologize if I'm speaking from an area of ignorance. It's not my intent, but if you're generating the revenue, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a national team, that's different. You know, like, it's not an apples to apples comparison, right? Like, I went to, like I said, last show, you know, I went to a WNBA game recently. It was awesome. It was pretty much the lower bowl was what was full, right? Like, you got to be able to sell tickets, and the tickets are cheaper, obviously, than they would be for a Laker game. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that the NBA has subsidized and has invested in the WNBA, and I think they do a lot of work to help promote it.
Which one is thing, good.
You know, you always see on Twitter, you know, and if God forbid someone tweets out some WNBA highlights, and then it's, you know, go make me a sandwich nonsense in the comments. And like, you never see basketball people talking like that to female athletes or to women's basketball players, right? Like, you never see coaches or players talking like that, because they understand, like, that's a fraternity, you know, I don't know the term. It's a mixed fraternity, right? Like, yeah. Where even when you're in high school, I remember coaching, like, you're traveling in a lot of times.
It's a very elite club.
Right. You're traveling with the girls team. The boys and the girls will travel together if they're playing the same team. You're sharing time in the gym. There's all sorts of, like you said, it's something that it's a fraternity. It's a club that everyone's a part of. So nobody really talks like that in basketball. But in terms of how everybody gets paid, there's just not the amount of revenue available. The average NBA salary is what, $8.5-9 million a year?
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
It's tough because you're also talking about the probably most individually profitable league in the world, right? Mm-hmm. In the NBA, where the average, like you just talked about, the average salary in the NBA, the average annual income is about $9 million. And like, there are very few leagues around the globe that make that amount of money. And you know, it just so happens that the WNBA is trying to, I don't want to say catch up to that, but in terms of the societal conversation, that's the comparison, right? Which it, mm-hmm. I don't think it should be. The other thing to take into account here, or the thing that needs to be pointed out here, and I'd be remiss if I didn't point it out, is when WNBA players say that they want to be paid fairly, they aren't talking about wanting to make as much right. as NBA players.
Yes, that is a very different conversation.
They want a you know, with all of this stuff in the NBA, the big conversation come CBA negotiation time is BRI split, right? The BRI split right now is 53-47 in the NBA.
Maybe no, it's basically 50-50
with you're right.
A bandwidth between 49-51 and 51-49.
But in the WNBA, it's way less than that. Like the there's a much larger gap between the amount of money split between owners and mm-hmm. players, right?
Interesting.
And when WNBA players say that they want, you know, quote unquote equal pay, they're talking about something closer to the equal split in BRI that you see in the NBA compared to the WNBA. And in that respect, I think that they're, you know, the owners just got to say, the owners and the players, they should be closer than they are right now. And I hope that they eventually do get there. But, you know, like, you and I are recording this right now, Pete, on a show, and you and I are paid completely based off of ad generated revenue, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, like, this show compared to other shows out there, like, we can't talk about equal pay in the same way, because this show just happens to generate more revenue than other shows out there. So, you know, it's tough because this country that we live in, and in the society that we live in, it's all about capitalism. And can you generate enough interest so that sponsors want to pay to put their product on the platform that you happen to be talking about or playing, you know, entertaining people with? And in this respect, the WNBA is still trying to figure that out. And look, they've made strides thus far. I hope that continues in that direction. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, it doesn't get any easier.
Jeez.
So we'll take a quick second. When we come back, we'll keep answering these questions. All right, so JNRO9676 writes, love the show, helps with my insomnia, and I mean this as a tremendous compliment. I guess if you say
Thank
so.
Thank you.
I guess, question for Anthony. You are rightfully very critical of the Jason Kidd hire for non-basketball reasons, specifically the domestic abuse charges in the past. How does Kobe's non-basketball allegations from Colorado influence your feelings about him? Thanks and keep up the great work. Look, it complicates things. It just does. You know, we weren't in that room when that stuff went down. I have done everything that I have possibly been able to do to try to inform myself as best as I can on that subject when it comes to Kobe and the way things went down in Eagle, Colorado. But it's hard not to think of that stuff when I talk about the athlete, given how hard I come down on guys like Lance Stephenson, as you mentioned, Jason Kidd. I'm a Vikings fan, so you had the Adrian Peterson situation where he was beating his kid, right? In the NFL, you have Antonio Brown, who is now a free agent. I would imagine he's going to get picked up because NFL teams care way more about winning than they do about the morality behind it. But it's the Kobe thing is tough. It's really, really tough, and it's one of the tougher cases when you talk about this specific subject. Pete, you wanted to chime in?
No, I mean, we still, when Billie Jean comes on the radio, right, we still bump that, or, you know, if the Thriller music, like, we still listen to Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's all sorts of, and this is a long-standing, you know, thing to consider is how do you separate the art from the artist, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the music, a lot of the movies, a lot of the sports that we consume are created by not so great people or people who have done some terrible things.
Or you can't control what the athlete or the entertainer has done apart from what they did on the court or while they were making that music. Like, they made them, they made music that you like. They played a sport in a way that you liked it. They won. They helped your specific team win. There isn't anything you could have done to not make them perform the, in some cases, really gross acts that they have.
So how is Jason Kidd different?
Because he isn't good. It, like, the, like,
I mean, that's probably what it comes in terms of, like, our feelings on it. That's true. That doesn't make it right.
No.
Right.
I mean, I'm being honest.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Right. Kobe won us 5 rings and an MVP over 20 years and entertained the shit out of us in that time. But that doesn't give us any moral ground to stand on. Right.
The number one reason why people really dislike me from like the beginning point of my career to now has been that, like, I'll kind of say, like, I just don't know how I feel about Kobe. Like, it's, you know, and look, I'm just saying that I don't know how I feel about him. It's a really complicated situation, right? And the people who have actually studied law don't know how, like, that case should have actually played out legally, you know? And look, I'm not saying that she lied. I'm not saying that Kobe told the truth. I don't know. I don't know how stuff went down there. I have no idea. And all I can say is that, like, I don't know. And as a result of my not knowing, it's just something that I always kind of have to factor into. Okay, yeah, Kobe was phenomenal as a basketball player, phenomenal as a Laker, one of the greatest Lakers specifically. Like, his contributions to the Lakers is some of the greatest contributions to the Lakers organization that we will ever see. But I just don't know how to feel about that other stuff.
You know, one thing that complicates things for me is, like, I admire parts of Kobe as a person. It's not just on the court. It's how he worked, how hard he worked too. And I think that there's a lot that's admirable there and a lot that, you know, is, can I...
With his craft specifically.
Right, with his craft. That's what I mean, right? Like, yeah. How hard he worked on being the best. And I think that that's difficult for really talented people like Kobe was. Like, a lot of the talented people I've met, they don't have to work as hard to get what they want, right? So somebody who's... and like, Kobe has a role player work ethic, right? Like, Kobe has a guy who had to be that way to even make the league type of work ethic. And he had that in an extremely talented package, right? So that the Colorado stuff definitely complicates it for me. This is something I wrestle with all the time. It's not something I love talking about in these formats because we're in such a soundbite society. Lord knows I wouldn't talk about it on Twitter or anything. This is something I have talked with my girlfriend about. She's a huge Kobe fan and also somebody who is an advocate for, you know, sexual assault and, you know, for victims of sexual assault and things like that. And it's like, hey, how do you reconcile that? And so I'm taking kind of a chicken shit cop out because I'm not necessarily revealing all of my thoughts, because that's something that but these are conversations I have with people, you know, that I trust in private, and that we can talk honestly about it. And the honestly, I end up on a lot of I don't know, just like that. And maybe that's chicken shit and cop out too.
I wish more people would end up on I don't know. You know, right. We don't know. There's just stuff about this, you know, whether it's Kobe.
Right. If he was convicted of something, then, you know, it makes it easier, right? It makes it from a
don't
like
know.
Yeah. But yeah, we don't
know. And you know, now as I said a second ago, when I say I don't know, as a result of my not knowing on this subject specifically, it's hard for me to not kind of keep that in the back of my head. It's like, yeah, but what was this guy actually capable of once upon a time? I don't know, you know. And that's I wish that was an answer that sufficed with people, but in this industry, I don't know is a pussy answer. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's the only answer we can give, given how little we really know about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of where I have to leave it. All right, let's end on a fun one. Are you ready?
Please do. Yes.
Good Lord, I'm drained. All right, this is from Salize. Hey, Anthony and Pete, love the show. Serious question. Anthony, does it bother you when Pete gets all the praise? It's like playing with LeBron. When things go right, Pete gets the credit. When things go bad, you get all the blame. Keep your head up. Thank you, Salize. Thank you.
Do you feel seen right now, Anthony?
Yeah, a little bit. No. All right. You and I talk about this quite a bit, right? And
how awesome I am and how you suck.
Exactly. Yeah. especially in our current negotiations. But like, one of the things that has always been what I've kind of tried to do on the show and the various shows, the iterations of the show that we've done, has always been, hey, I'm just here to try to make a conversation take place that people are interested in listening to. Right. Now, every so often, that means I play the heel. Every so often, that means I play the idiot. Every so often, that means I offer up a question or two that really piss people off, because that's how people get interested in a conversation. Does that mean that people probably don't like me as much? Yeah, probably. But at the end of the day, like, does that make for a more interesting show? Yeah, it does. It does. And I'm not the hero that people deserve necessarily, but I'm the hero that people need right now.
Oh, oh geez. Wow.
No, I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about this stuff? Because, like, I know how I feel about it. It is kind of tough every so often. Well, not every so often. Every fucking week to, like, hop on here and see, like, oh, I skip past. Here. There you go. Air DJ 31 says, hello, I currently only listen to the episodes with Pete. Big fan of Pete's work with LFR and with Darius. I see that once a week, twice a week or so. And yeah, does it get annoying every so often? Sure. But like at the end of the day, if that's like the worst part of like me doing this job, this is like the best job on the face of the planet. So I'm going to mm-hmm. take it.
Yeah, it's even better when people like you. I'm just busting your balls, man. No, you're always
That was a perfect response. I should have We'll talk to you guys next week.
No, man, you're very gracious about that stuff. That's also not stuff that I'm necessarily trying to go out there and, you know, raising up my hand, like, you know, turn up the volume from the crowd or anything like that. It's just, this is something we talked about long ago of, you know, I always talk about the community and about us, how as content creators, like if we work together, we can create something a lot better and something that's individually more beneficial for all of us than if we are rivals. And it could be very easy to have a lot of that in this. And I think we've seen a lot of the fruits from that. But I see that too. People will like at me in tweets that say stuff like that. And I cringe and I avoid, because that's how I handle that stuff. But I'm not proud. I should probably stand up for you one of these days.
But. No, it's more fun if I'm the heel. Like, the show is more fun. Like, to the point you just made. If it was just me, it was just me doing the show, I would conduct myself in a very different way, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, my job at that point would be to get people interested in a show where it's just me talking. Also, if I was doing that show, nobody would like it because nobody just wants to listen to me talk for 40 minutes or so, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if I can do anything to get people interested in a show and also have the benefit, and honestly, like, benefit is, like, the nth degree of the definition of the word benefit, like, it's been a huge plus that I've been able to work with you. It's been a huge plus that I've been able to work with Harrison. Mm-hmm. Back when Darius and I used to work together. Like, Darius, people don't know this. Darius was my first editor. Mm. Like, when I was just trying to get, like, break into this industry, Darius, like, took me in at Foreign Blue and Gold after, like, 15 emails. where I was like, just, like, trying to get him to take me in. So, like... Yeah, I could have a show nowadays that might be more popular among, like, the very small audience that shows the amount of interest that show would generate. But I would rather be a part of a bigger show because of the role that I play in making it a more popular show by bringing in people that, you know, experts that people want to listen talk about the thing that they're really interested in, and that's my spot. I have a daughter. I'm saving up to buy a house. I'm not at all complaining about the spot that this role that I have carved out for myself has made for myself. It's a really cool career that I've carved out.
You know, I started this episode with, like, thanking the listeners for carrying us through the off season with their great questions. This turned out to be the most fucking uncomfortable mailbag we've
this
ever
is tough, done. Man.
And cringing the whole time. Good job, guys. Good job.
We have a ton more questions to get to. We have been talking now somehow already for 30 minutes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to end the show right here. Go make myself another whiskey drink because, good Lord, this was taxing. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Keep those questions coming. And this is the last week. We have 4 more days of shows before we get to actual basketball conversations.
Can't wait.
We're almost there, everybody. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.